the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
My co-host this week is Nicholas Redfern. Later on in the show, we'll hear from Mark Pilkington. He's written a new book, a hardcover book, believe it or not, called Mirage Men, subtitled An Adventure into Paranoia, Espionage, Psychological Warfare, and UFOs. And we have to check whether it's in that order or some other order. I'm Gene Steinberg. This is the Paracast. Nick, you've written so many books, maybe not as many as I have, but you've written a lot of books. How do you go about researching a new book? Do you get suggestions from your publishers as to a new title or what?
No, it's never really through the publisher. It's just basically, you know, me doing research and then finding something that potentially looks like it could be an interesting story and then approaching a publisher to see if they are interested. It's usually that simple. It's very, very rarely that, you know, a publisher will say, can you do a book on this? You know, they'll certainly invite you to suggest ideas to them, but it's very rarely, in my experience at least, that it's the other way around.
We've had a thread open over at the Paracast forums at forum.theparacast.com, and it was started by our friend Chris O'Brien. He's trying to get you in trouble here. And it's all about this new book you have that we'll be talking about in more detail in the next couple of weeks called Final Events. How did that idea come to you?
Well, actually, once the idea came to me, a number of years ago, about 4 years ago, I interviewed an Anglican priest from Nebraska, Lincoln, Nebraska, named Ray Beauchet. Ray may not be known to too many people in ufology today, but he's a former state director of MUFON for Nebraska. And he was particularly heavily involved in the 1980s in trying to use his senator to push for any American materials that might exist on the Rendlesham Forest case to be declassified into the public domain. And so Ray, you know, was at the forefront of a lot of good research in the 1980s. And as an Anglican priest, he came around to the view that the whole UFO phenomenon, the bulk of what we perceived as a UFO phenomenon today, if you like, was not extraterrestrial, rather was literally demonic. You know, I mean, literally demonic. And in 1991, Ray was visited almost like a clandestine deep throat type situation by two Department of Defense scientists who said that they wanted to discuss his theories with them because they were working on some sort of clandestine DOD project that involved contacting what they described to Ray as non-human entities, or NHEs as they described them, with a view to trying to understand and harness some of their sort of, I guess what we would call paranormal powers, remote viewing, things like that, with a view to using them as a weapon. And these people felt that the further they were getting into it, it was creating like a negative backlash with bad luck and deaths and ill health and all sorts of things affecting the group. And they literally went from going from the idea that it was extraterrestrial to the idea that it was some sort of negative demonic force. When I interviewed Ray about this in 2007, we dug into it very deeply to the extent that it allowed me to sort of put feelers out there and research the story further to where I literally was able to uncover details of this think tank type group in the government, allied to the people that Ray had spoken to, that essentially put me on the track of the book. And the book is a study of this group and what we know about it and how it came to its conclusions and ideas about this whole demonic angle, which, as I point out in the book, is a belief system, you know, in the same way that the extraterrestrial hypothesis is a belief system. But it's kind of intriguing to find that there are people in government who've researched this angle and literally come to the conclusion that our supposed alien visitors have demonic origins. And I do mean, when I say demonic, I mean literally, you know, burning hell demonic, that sort of thing.
So we're talking about here the basic belief of God, the devil, heaven and hell. Now, I don't remember the name of the author. I read a book about this a few years ago. There have been several suggesting that we're going to have some kind of ascension, the people who follow the way and the truth, kind of an older religious kind of philosophy. So is that what this think tank is considering, that those who follow some kind of righteous path will survive whatever's going to happen?
Yeah, that's exactly what they believe. They're very deep, you know, fundamentalist Christian belief systems. And again, that's something I stress in the book, that many of the people in the group hold deep religious beliefs. Basically, what kicked things off for them was the idea and the notion that the whole UFO mystery in 47 had its beginnings in the work of people like Aleister Crowley and Jack Parsons. Crowley with, you know, invoking this grey-like being called Lamb, and then Parsons with his Babylon working and supposedly opening doorways and that sort of thing. And they dug deeply into all this and the whole idea that the contactee movement and channeling and, you know, channeled voices and that sort of thing had more to do, again, with the occult than it did with anything of a literal extraterrestrial nature. And they took it even further, delving into abductions and coming to the conclusion that abductions were a means by which these entities were sort of deceiving us into believing they were scientists, if you like, from beyond the stars, coming here to save their race when they wanted to literally get out their clutches into our souls, I guess, in simplistic terms. And it's a very strange story about how this group believes. They basically believe that the Earth is a farm, and that after death, these entities harvest the human life force, like the soul, as a form of energy, like a food source. And they believe that that's why they don't land on the White House lawn, but why they don't destroy us either, because they feel that the Earth is like a farm, and then we're on our physical death. We're literally like batteries to them that they extract from the human life force. It's like a very disturbing and dark story, and more disturbing to find that, you know, the whole swathes of people in governments who have clandestinely, I guess, adhered to this theory for decades.
This is very interesting, though. We've heard all these stories about government agents and about secret, various secret projects, and maybe this is something I gather we'll be talking with Mark Pilkington about later on in this episode. But, you know, even if there is some kind of group of people who believe this, is it just some people who got a hold of some government money and they're playing a game? Can they really support this kind of stuff?
Well, yeah, I mean, this is the important thing I stress in the book, is that this was like a think tank type organization that did indeed get not too much funding to start with, but when they particularly attracted certain people in government, and particularly in the Bush administration and the Reagan administration, who held deep religious end times type belief systems, that they got a great deal more funding. But it basically is a semi quasi official group of people who would get together at various times and, you know, undertake research into these different areas, prepare reports, etc. But the important thing is that it was a belief system based around teachings of the Bible, if you like, and then applying it to the UFO phenomenon. So, you know, you could argue that these are people within governments who happen to have an interest in UFOs as well, but where it went beyond what those of us on the outside can do is that they got official funding and apparently deeply influenced certain people in the administrations. That's sort of the big difference, if you like.
Well, certainly if people in the administrations were deeply influenced, that would be a question. Otherwise, you know, people would say, well, your tax dollars at work. I mean, you know, they spend money on lots of wacky things. And this is something, though, that we'll have to explore when we get a hold of a copy of the book, and Nick will come back and we'll discuss it in detail. But today, and I guess it's almost a related subject because we're dealing with all sorts of strange things that might involve espionage and psychological warfare related to UFOs. Tell us briefly about our guest.
Well, our guest is Mark Pilkington, who's a fellow Brit who still lives in Britain. I see Mark very occasionally now and again. I think the first time I met Mark was in about 1998 at a UFO conference, and most recently, I think about 2 years ago, at Ryan Wood's Crash UFO conference in Las Vegas. And Mark's a freelance writer. He's written from everybody like the English Guardian newspaper, 14 Times, The Anomalist, and a whole range of other journals. He wrote a book in 2007 called Far Out, 101 Strange Tales from Science's Outer Edge. And he also runs a website called Strange Attractor, where you can find all sorts of interesting, unusual anomalies and 14 tales, etc. And Mark's got a new book out now, as you said, Mirage Men, an adventure into paranoia, espionage, psychological warfare, and UFOs.
Coming up next on
The Paracast.
Hey neighbors, ever thought about creating a website? With HostGator, you can create your own website with your very own .com domain name. HostGator has a free site builder and thousands of design templates to create your website today. Whether you want to create a blog, a photo gallery, a family page, or a website for your business, HostGator has the right plan for you, starting at less than $5 a month for ultra-reliable website hosting with 99.9% uptime and true 24/7 live support available by phone, chat, or email, and based right here in the U.S. Don't be left without a website. It's more affordable and easier than you think. Sign up at technightowl.com/gator, that's G-A-T-O-R, to get the lowest possible price. At HostGator, that's technightowl.com/gator to get a special deal on all their web hosting services.
On the average, Americans work between 45 to 50 years, hoping to build up enough wealth to retire and live out their golden years. Unfortunately, with taxation, the rising cost of food, energy, housing, and medical, many retirees are forced to live below the poverty line. Is this a flaw for the enterprise, or is our monetary unit we call the Federal Reserve Note forcing us into perpetual debt, ensuring inflation and higher taxes? These questions and more can be answered by reading G. Edward Griffin's book, The Creature from Jekyll Island. Congressman Ron Paul states it's what every American needs to know about central bank power, a gripping adventure into the secret world of international banking cartel. Hi, this is Ted Anderson. I will give a silver dollar from the early 1900s to anyone who purchases this book. Call 1-800-686-2237 and order a copy today. It's critical that the public be made aware of the system. Call and order your copy today at 1-800-686-2237. That's 1-800-686-2237.
If the cost of your prescriptions are getting out of control, you want to listen carefully to this. RxDrugCard.com is a simple, innovative program designed to give individuals the same purchasing power as large HMOs and insurance companies. As a member of RxDrugCard.com, you'll enjoy savings of up to 80% on all prescription medications at over 52,000 USA pharmacies, including Walmart, Walgreens, and Eckerd's. Don't risk ruining your health by using cheap, counterfeit foreign drugs. This program provides savings on safe, genuine, FDA-approved medications. With low membership fees, unlimited use, no age or income requirements, and coverage for all pre-existing conditions, RxDrugCard.com is an absolute must for anyone who pays for their own prescriptions. Enroll today for as little as $4.50 per month at www.RxDrugCard.com and start saving immediately. RxDrugCard.com is backed by a 30-day money-back guarantee. Visit RxDrugCard.com or call 888-216-2461. That's 888-216-2461.
Less is more. I want you to think of Life Change Tea as, well, a 2008 Ferrari 612. The Ferrari 612 is a two-door, four-passenger luxury car that gives an exploding 540 horsepower through its 6-liter V12. It has a top speed of 199 miles per hour and can accelerate 0 to 60 in about 4 seconds. Life Change Tea will accelerate your life into feeling more energy, losing weight, and cleansing toxins out of your body so you'll live longer. And guess what? You can accelerate your life without a Ferrari 612 sticker price of $318,000. You can buy green tea for less, but unfortunately, it's just another daily driver with no performance. So for just about a dollar a day, you can drive the Ferrari of teas. Don't be fooled by size. Check our website out at getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. Or you can call us at 928-308-0408. Again, that's 928-308-0408. Remember Life Change Tea.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
We want to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com. Get in on all the action at forum.theparacast.com.
We have Mark Pilkington joining us. He has a new book out called Mirage Men, an adventure into paranoia, espionage, psychological warfare, and UFOs. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in the Paracast. Our co-host this week is Nick Redfern. Mark, welcome to the Paracast. We're talking to you from your home in the UK where it's raining.
It is raining, drizzling, I'd say. It's a typical early autumn evening here in grey, muggy London.
Okay, so in grey, muddy London, how did you get sucked into investigating paranormal events?
In the American Midwest, yes. Well, I've been fascinated with, I guess, the Fortean and anomalous phenomena since I was a kid, really, and I always like to say when everyone else was reading the famous Five and Enid Blyton, which actually I wonder if American listeners are familiar with. I was, when at the age of 7 and 8, I was reading sort of H.G. Wells and Dracula and things like that. So then I sort of began to realize that some people thought these things were real, not just fiction. And I discovered Fortean Times magazine at an early age and sort of got sucked into that and ended up about 15 years later working for them, which was great. And I sort of wrote a sort of short investigative piece every issue for them for several years, and eventually sort of decided to go it alone. And here I am with my first book out, which is very exciting.
Now, in choosing to write Mirage Men, among all the topics that one can choose, why did you pick this one?
Because I really think that UFOs are kind of the most important and most immediately accessible and dominant kind of flavor of anomalous encounter and experience that people are likely to have and to hear about or to read about in our modern technological world. And I actually really think that they're an important part of our culture. I mean, they still represent, I believe, a fascinating scientific puzzle, and they're a sort of, you know, nodal point or a magnet for a wide range of scientific anomalies, from natural phenomena like atmospheric and astronomical events to, you know, perhaps true paranormal phenomena, extra-dimensional physics, or, you know, incursions into our space-time by something else entirely. I think, you know, they are really worthy of study.
Now, the title Mirage Men, that seems to connote some kind of semi-realistic nature to this, the fact that they're not always what you think they are, mirages, that they might not even be always real.
Yes, I mean, there's obviously a connotation of illusion and delusion in the title, and also, obviously, I'm sort of referencing the fact that the American desert and the Midwest play such a central role in sort of the development of the UFO story. But yes, I mean, as well, I think nobody would now, sort of 60 plus years down the line, nobody would disagree that the great majority of UFO experiences are the result of misperceptions or misperceptions of some kind, or just sort of accidental misidentifications of mundane objects, or, and this is what the book's about, on very rare occasions, genuine deception.
Well, that's an interesting thing about deceptions. You know, the other implication I got from hearing the title Mirage Men, I thought, you know what, the Three Men in Black.
Yes.
Okay, so are we looking into Men in Black as part of this overall picture?
It's interesting. I mean, the Men in Black is something I would have spent more time on if I really had to keep the book kind of to a reasonable length. But the Men in Black certainly come into it. And one thing I found when sort of going through the historical material is that contact officers of the different sort of intelligence and military organizations would habitually, it seems, actually dress up as people from another organization in order to conduct their investigations and research. And I would imagine occasionally they might just, you know, put on dark suits in order to appear imposing and even threatening.
So is this kind of like a military turf war where the Air Force doesn't want to step on the Navy, or the NCIS doesn't want to step on the Army? Is it one of those turf wars where they do this because they don't want to get involved in that kind of thing?
Yeah, I think to a certain extent, and also I think perhaps if they don't want to be identified as one, you know, as one organization or another. But I think it was normal for certainly CIA and NSA contact officers to dress in civilian clothing. So I would imagine they would dress in, you know, would, if they were involved in these kinds of contacts, then I think they would, you know, they would dress up, look sharp. But I think another important, part that we shouldn't underestimate in this is the ufologists themselves. And there's, I think, very little doubt that certain sort of prank-prone members of the UFO community might well, at times, particularly I think in the 60s, have dressed up to play tricks on each other and sort of perform stunts. And I think particularly of people like the late John Keel and Gray Barker and I think James Mosley of Source Mirror, I suspect on some occasions they have been somehow at least involved in Men in Black escapades.
Well, we know that Mosley and Barker were certainly involved in escapades because Jim has basically confessed some of those escapades on the show.
Oh, great. I haven't heard that particular episode, but I would like to. But yes, I've read accounts of them doing this. And of course, you know, Gray Barker more or less invented the sort of concept of the Men in Black, which, I mean, one possibility I think is interesting to consider. Maybe after Barker had had created this concept, maybe some in the intelligence or military spheres thought, oh, well, here's something we can play with. Here's another identity or another costume for us to adopt.
So basically you have the fiction story of the Men in Black created by Gray Barker, maybe extrapolating what happened to Albert K. Bender many years ago. Mm-hmm. And then you have the authorities looking at that and say, hey, we can do that too. Let's have some fun with it.
Yes, I think that's certainly the case, and I think that's quite likely to be the case, but I also certainly think that kind of circularity is a large part of how the UFO phenomenon has kind of developed and accrued this sort of rich mythology around it, I think, and it works both ways. You know, the military and intelligence authorities will play on things that emerge from the UFO community, and we see that much later on in the 80s with the Paul Benowitz story, and I think I'm sure it works the opposite way around, where the UFO community might adopt ideas picked up from the military community, and obviously there's some traffic of, there's human traffic between all those spheres, and that a lot of UFO investigators and researchers have been in the military or intelligence services at some time themselves.
And maybe civilians are being sucked into things they shouldn't get sucked into. I want to ask you about the Benowitz case for people who are new to the show and haven't heard about that. In our next segment, we have Mark Pilkington. He's author of Mirage Men. The co-host is Nicholas Redfern. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in
The Paracast.
Okay, neighbors, here's the problem. Face-to-face business meetings with clients and colleagues are always going to be important. But business travel is a hassle, and it's often a complete waste of money. Well, here's a solution for you. Do more, travel less with GoToMeeting. GoToMeeting is an award-winning online meeting service brought to you by Citrix. With just a click, host sales presentations, training sessions, or product demos right from your own desk. Avoid the hassle of traveling and still exceed your sales goals. Plus, GoToMeeting is just $49 a month for unlimited online meetings. Plus, voice over IP and phone conferencing is included. My listeners can try GoToMeeting free for 45 days. For this special offer, visit gotomeeting.com/podcast. Once again, GoToMeeting free for 45 days. Visit gotomeeting.com/podcast.
Where have all the military surplus stores gone? Don't worry, you don't need one. Because everything you need at Military Surplus is at mainmilitary.com. That's M-A-I-N-E, military.com. One of the last surviving true military surplus stores in the country. Go online now to mainmilitary.com and discover a source for hard-to-find surplus items at true surplus prices. Surplus gun cleaning kits as low as $2.99. Complete chemical suits as low as $11.99. See our huge selection of gas masks, filters, and accessories. Finish at Allstate M10 gas masks are 3 for $30, and Swiss filters are 3 for $12. Searching for Strike Anywhere matches? MaineMilitary.com has them, plus a whole new product line of survival and first aid kits and lots more. Get free shipping on orders over $50 only at MaineMilitary.com. That's M-A-I-N-E Military.com, or call 877-608-0179, 877-608-0179. MaineMilitary.com, the main name in military supply.
If you've used the drug Reglan, or its generic form, metoclopramide, please listen carefully. Reglan has been shown to cause serious neurological side effects, consisting of involuntary movements of the face, limbs, and other body parts. If you or a loved one has suffered this condition, call the New York and New Jersey law firm of Oshman and Mirasola at 888-730-DRUG. That's 888-730-DRUG for a free consultation. Call 888-730-DRUG. That's 888-730-3784. If you've taken the contraceptive Yaz or Yasmin, please listen carefully. These drugs have been found to cause blood clots in the body and gallbladder disease. If you or a loved one has suffered these side effects, contact the New York and New Jersey firm of Oshman and Mirasola at 888-730-DRUG immediately for free consultation. Call 888-730-DRUG. That's 888-730-3784. Again, call Oshman and Mirasola at 888-730-3784.
Hi, this is Alex Jones. Remember when I said you spell freedom F-O-O-D? It's really true. Legislation is in the process of restricting the growing and sharing of food, and a record number of Americans, over 43 million, depend on the government to feed themselves. Food prices are going up for Americans. Prices are going up, even for eFoodsDirect.com. This will require their first price increase in 3 years. The most important thing Americans can do for their own freedom and survival in these hardest of times is to get supplies of high-quality storable food. Because of the huge response to this buy three and get one free special, eFoodsDirect.com will continue this special until September 27th. Right now, you can buy three and get one free at the old prices. But move fast, because this offer ends September 27th. Call 1-800-409-5633 or on the web at eFoodsDirect.com/Alex. That's 800-409-5633 or on the web at eFoodsDirect.com/Alex.
Tired of searching for great talk radio?
And I think it really does make a difference.
We are the GCN Radio Network. Yes, yes,
yes. You're in the Paracast. You never know what's going to happen next.
We're talking with Mark Pilkington, author of Mirage Men. Our co-host is Nick Redfern. I'm Gene Steinberg. We're in the Paracast with another segment with Mark. And I wanted to ask you, one of the classic attempts at harassment and disinformation is Paul Benowitz. Can you refresh the memory of our listeners about this case?
Yes, certainly. The Benowitz story is the best known and probably the sort of only genuinely accepted instance of a Air Force deception program sort of being uncovered and exposed, and that was actually done back in 1989 by William Moore, the UFO researcher and author of the Roswell incident, who actually was himself kind of wrapped up in the program. And Paul Benowitz was a physicist and engineer running his own lab, Thunder Scientific, on the edge of Kirtland Air Force Base in Albuquerque, where he was developing tools and gauges and equipment for all of the, well, certainly for the Air Force and the Navy, I think for NASA as well. And there are kind of various paths that you can take with the story, but the sort of bare facts are that he, in 1980, began filming and observing strange lights flying within clear eye shot of his own home at the side of the base, and also began picking up radio or electromagnetic emissions, which he connected to these lights and dutifully reported to the security personnel at Kirtland, as would be the right thing to do. And instead of either saying, thanks for letting us know, Paul, but, you know, don't worry, these are our own craft, don't worry about it, and just, we'd rather you didn't keep filming them or keep talking about them. Instead, they actually encouraged Benowitz in to continue sort of monitoring these the lights and the emissions, and actually encouraged him in his growing belief and delusion that these were extraterrestrial in nature. And this continued for actually for several years, and then ultimately sort of grew out of hand to the extent that Benowitz was hospitalized for his own good by his family in a mental institution for a month, and really sort of his life, his family life, his business, and I think, you know, everything suffered as a result. It's a very complicated story, which I sort of tell in the book, and is also very well told in Greg Bishop's Project Beta book, which is also available. But one point where sort of the version of events that I sort of followed differs from Greg's is very early on, it's quite clear that Benowitz could have been stopped dead in his tracks by Air Force intelligence or by the military, and they could have actually forced him to stop listening in on their transmissions and to stop filming, but they chose not to, which begs the question why. And I suggest following Brad Sparks and Barry Greenwood's own research, I suggest that really the idea was to use Benowitz as a mouthpiece to spread disinformation into the UFO community, which he did extremely successfully through multiple channels and through multiple individuals. And these ideas that he kind of pumped into the UFO culture are still with us today, and, you know, including the idea of an underground alien base at Dulce, New Mexico, negotiations and agreements between the U.S. government and the extraterrestrials, and also the sort of malevolent, hungry nature of the extraterrestrials themselves. A lot of these ideas were kind of were developed in Benowitz's already sort of disturbed mind, and then led to a kind of dramatic upsurgence of interest in the UFO story and in the popular culture in the sort of late 80s and early 90s, most of it predicated around this kind of negative and slightly, actually quite terrifying idea that the extraterrestrials were malevolent and we were just about holding them at bay.
Also, is this also responsible for the stories in connection with UFO abductions that the aliens might be trying to create a race of hybrids? Is that part of this deception?
Yes, that was certainly something that Benowitz kind of developed. That was one of the lines he developed, but that was also kind of circulating in the culture at the time. But he conducted hypnotic sessions with a woman called Myrna Hansen, who described sort of terrifying scenes in an underground alien base involving so human body parts bubbling away in vats and mutilated cows being carried into the environment for experimentation, and also the idea that she'd been implanted by the aliens to in order to control her thoughts and actions and sort of make her traceable at any point by the extraterrestrials. All of these ideas were sort of, if not originated by Benowitz, but were certainly exacerbated by him and sort of pumped with much gusto into the UFO culture.
Well, of course, one example of someone who follows this sort of thing is a UFO abduction researcher, Dr. David Jacobs, who's also been on the show. He's basically a doctor in history, but he's been doing abduction research, and he believes apparently in this hybrid thing. Is he also being taken in by this?
That's a very, very complicated and long story. I actually saw Jacobs give one, I think his first ever presentation in the UK in the mid-90s, and it worried me, but absolutely terrified my friend who couldn't sleep at night afterwards. But I think, yes, I mean, I think, you know, there are several people who have been kind of I suppose, sort of mutually encouraging each other in developing the sort of alien abduction narrative. There's obviously Bud Hopkins as well as Paul Benowitz and David Jacobs, and it's reached a point where the sort of story has become that, yes, there's a sort of hybrid breeding program in order to, I don't know, whether it's to repopulate an alien planet or to take over our own, I'm not sure. But, you know, you can sort of see the evolution of this narrative, and it's a frightening narrative over the course of 20 or 30 years. So the question I would ask is, you know, if we think back to the late 80s and through to the mid-90s when the abduction scenario was really part of the popular culture, and you would see the grey alien faces and the schwa stickers and you know, inflatable dolls almost everywhere you look, particularly if you were in America, as I was at the time. You have to wonder where they've all gone now. Perhaps the aliens realized they were getting too much exposure and decided to go underground.
Or they got enough of our sperm and enough of our babies or fetuses, and they decided to do something somewhere else.
Yes, of course, that's a possibility. But, I mean, I would read the abduction scenario sort of as a myth or as a lore that has sort of developed and probably tells us more about ourselves than it does about extraterrestrials.
We'll have Nick Redfern joining on the questioning in a moment. We have Mark Pilkington. He's author of Mirage Men, subtitled An Adventure into Paranoia, Espionage, Psychological Warfare, and UFOs. And evidently, some of that psychological warfare may involve UFO abductions. A reminder, if you have comments about the show, you, of course, can write us, but you can also check out our forums at forum.theparacast.com. That's forum.theparacast.com. It's free to sign up, free to get involved, and the discussions can become rather fierce, rather hot and heavy, but they're nevertheless fun. Our co-host is Nick Redfern. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in.
Where are we? Oh, we're in the Paracast.
Are you ready to order the official Paracast t-shirt? You asked, we answered. We're now taking orders for the official Paracast t-shirt. It comes in white, 100% cotton. The front of it features the same logo that we have on our community forums. On the back it says, Separating Signal from Noise. To order the official Paracast t-shirt, here's all you have to do. Visit our new online store at store.theparacast.com. One more time, that's store.theparacast.com. You can use a major credit card to place your order for the official Paracast t-shirt. Hey neighbors, we have one more thing to talk about, and that's more merchandise at the official Paracast store. We have hats, we have jackets, we even have a flip video camcorder customized with the Paracast logo at the official Paracast store. It's all now available at the official Paracast store, store.theparacast.com.
Question. What would you rather drink? Acidic water, which burns holes in your body and causes loss of bone mass? Or alkaline water, which promotes high energy and vibrant health? The answer is clear. And if you're drinking acidic water, you're helping cancer cells and bacteria to grow out of control. AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops combine a unique formula of the most alkaline minerals. Using Plasma pH Drops is the best way to alkalize your water and help you get rid of acid and regain your health and energy. Simply put 10 drops in the water you drink to raise the pH to a healthy alkaline level. Most experts agree that the water you drink should be at a pH level of 8 or higher. Disease organisms like bacteria, viruses, or cancer cannot survive in an alkaline high pH environment. Order your bottle of AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops now by going directly to AlkaVision.com. That's AlkaVision.com. Or by calling 269-409-1776. Again, 269-409-1776.
If you owe the IRS money you can't pay, then listen carefully, because you already know that the problem won't go away by itself. You can get help today from the leading tax expert in the country, Dan Pilla.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. The IRS isn't going to just forget about you. Right now, the IRS is hiring thousands of tax collectors to go after delinquent accounts just like yours. That's why you need to take action today, and I can help. I take a simple but proven approach to solving your tax debt problem. First, I stabilize collections so you don't have to worry about wage and bank levies. Next, I build a detailed plan to get your debt reduced to the fullest extent possible, sometimes even eliminated. Finally, I work with you every step of the way to get your problem solved once and for all. So call now for a free consultation. Call 1-800-346-6829.
Dan Pilla will solve your tax problem, guaranteed. He's helped thousands of people, and he can help you too. Call us today at 800-346-6829. That's 800-34-NO-TAX.
Do you know someone who's a Constitution basher? Then here's the ammo you need to silence them once and for all. Introducing the Crash Course on the U.S. Constitution, How to Argue with a Liberal about Constitutional Issues and Win Every Time. If you believe it's time we stop disgusting left-wing lies and start telling the truth about America's Christian heritage, this Crash Course for Patriots is for you. Start neutralizing the liberal propaganda being force-fed in our schools, the workplace, and the media. The Crash Course on the U.S. Constitution is an audio power program that includes 6 CDs jam-packed with amazing information, insights, and truth that will shut the mouth of any lie-loving liberal. Order your Crash Course on the U.S. Constitution online at thefoundersplan.com and look for the free bonus kit. Call today 1-877-327-0365. That's 877-327-0365. Or go to thefoundersplan.com. For God's honest truth, go to thefoundersplan.com today.
Bringing you the best in alternative talk radio for over 10 years. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
Hi, this is Nick Pope. You're listening to the Paracast.
Nick Redfern is our co-host. Our guest is Mark Pilkington, author of Mirage Men, an adventure, definitely an adventure, I'm just adding that, into paranoia, espionage, psychological warfare, and UFOs.
All those things are in the book, yeah.
Thank you. Gene Steinberg, you're in the Paracast. We were talking about abductions being part of the disinformation scenario. Nick, you want to continue with that, with the questioning, and pursue what you would like to?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think one of the important things, just before I get to the questions, Gene, is to point out for the listeners who may not have Mark's book yet, that the book's sort of very much like a road trip of Mark and a friend and colleague of Mark's, John Lundberg, as they travel around the U.S. investigating the whole UFO mystery and speaking to a lot of well-known figures within the UFO field and some, I guess, almost near legendary figures, people like Richard Doty, and literally hanging out with them for like a week. And it's sort of very good road trip feel of two guys immersing themselves in what is sort of one of the strangest phenomena out there and actually finding themselves, I guess, to some extent, at a loss from their moorings almost, of wondering what to believe, who to believe, what not to believe, and who not to believe. So in that respect, you know, it's a very good treatment of what happens when, you know, an investigative journalist gets on the road and really delves deep into the UFO mystery. And I think the good thing is that Mark's book doesn't come across as like a wide-eyed wannabe true believer, but equally it's not, as some people have actually said, like a debunking exercise. It's more an open-minded look at the subject and realizing that there's been a great deal of manipulation of the phenomenon by the intelligence services, but not dismissing the possibility that at the heart of it, there really could be a genuine UFO mystery. Would you agree with that, Mark? Have I sort of read it right?
Absolutely, yeah. That's the most brilliant summary I have yet heard. Thanks very much.
No,
if I spend all day sort of responding to the online sort of postings of people saying I'm just another debunker and the book, you know, has nothing new to offer, I would really have no time for anything else. And then if I had a pound for all the times that people said that without actually reading the book, then I might be a rich man. But that's absolutely right. And one of the things I wanted to do was kind of provide a sense of what it actually feels like to kind of, you know, to become immersed in this material and as you say, to sort of try and present the thought processes and the emotions involved in just trying to make sense of what is an incredibly complex and often baffling and often disturbing story. And you know, one of the things that's been great to hear from people is that they think that the book has actually sort of been helped them to sort of, you know, fight a path through the just mountains and mountains and mountains and terabytes of material that's out there and can be incredibly baffling and confusing to people who aren't already sort of well versed in the subject. And one of the things I also have really wanted to do with the book is to make it an outward-looking book about UFOs rather than just a, sort of another UFO book that's not engaging with the wider world around it. Mm-hmm. So it was important for me to put when I was looking at the historical side of the subject, to put that into the context of what mm-hmm. was going on in the world. And I think, you know, that's really very important for people to gain a sort of deeper and a wider understanding of where UFOs fit into our world and our culture.
Okay. And early on in the book, obviously you get into one of the most famous and I guess almost formative cases of the modern era of ufology, that's Roswell. And, you know, you talk about quite deeply the story of the flying saucer, the book by Bernard Newman, which actually, I don't know if you know this, it gets re-released this month.
Is it?
A new edition of it being published, yeah.
Oh, can you talk
a bit about that and how that sort of, I mean, it's a genuinely fascinating story of how it ties in with the whole Roswell saga and who Newman was, etc.
It really is. And I first heard about this from Magonia magazine, which is a very long-running British UFOs and folklore mag, and I must have read about it, I think, in the early 90s. But it's a book published in 1948 and written by a man called Bernard Newman, who wrote several sort of potboiler spy thrillers, really, but he had genuinely worked in British intelligence and was actually quite well respected as an operator in that field, and I think as a result of probably was privy to a few, you know, tidbits of information, certainly to ideas that were floating around. And it takes really as its premise the a statement made by the then Foreign Secretary Anthony Eden, and one that's sort of been repeated many times, curiously, by Ronald Reagan and amongst others, and essentially saying, you know, wouldn't the world stop fighting and wouldn't we all come to realize we're just one species on our blue planet if we were faced with some kind of threat from outer space. In fact, here's the quote. This is actually at a United Nations conference on the 1st of March 1947, and Anthony Eden said, "Sometimes I think the people of this distracted planet will never really get together until they find someone on Mars to get mad against." So in Newman's book, a kind of secret cabal of scientists, an international cabal of scientists, launch a series of rockets and crash them around the world in different parts of the world. And on each of these rockets is encoded a sort of hieroglyphic script. And the script kind of pieces together the fact that these are from outer space and that they're coming here. And actually at the end of the novel, the scientists kind of fake an alien invasion with people walking around in sort of strange kind of costumes made out of various animal parts. But the end result is as hoped for, which is that all the worlds are actually bizarrely all given their own nuclear weapons, and therefore peace follows. So that sort of dates it a little bit, perhaps. But the parallels with what would happen. What had happened the previous year in Roswell, the idea that something crashed, it was announced as a flying saucer, are sort of quite strange, I would say, to say the least. And the resonances are there, and we don't know if that was the sort of motivation behind the Roswell announcement itself, but certainly the parallels can't be avoided. And as I say, the theme of, you know, a threat from outer space uniting the warring factions on Earth is one that have, comes up regularly throughout the 20th century and throughout the history of the Cold War. In the 1950s, actually, Leon Davidson, the Manhattan Project scientist and UFO researcher, actually took things several steps further and suggested that Alan Dulles of the CIA was actually behind a kind of plan to fake flying saucer landings in order to promote this kind of sort of sense of global unity and sort of cosmic awareness in humankind.
Now, I want to mention very briefly Dr. Leon Davidson because I knew him casually. Okay, yeah, because he used to hang out with Jim Moseley in the old days. And he also released, I guess, an annotated version of Project Blue Book Special Report 14.
That's right. Yeah.
That's right. That's the one where a large number of very significant cases were included.
Mm-hmm. And the edition I found amazingly at the British Library, actually, I was surprised by that, from the mid-1970s, has a kind of appendix which I found very useful called The CIA and the Sources, which collects a lot of his writing from various UFO magazines and proved to be a real treasure trove of information, actually. But he was a very, very interesting character, and I think a sort of much neglected and important figure in the early development of the UFO story. I think if people had paid more attention to him early on, I think things would have panned out very differently for the UFO story.
Well, without going into much detail, I think some of us think that the UFO field as a whole is one big ungainly mess.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll get into that in more detail in our next segment. We have Mark Pilkington. He's author of Mirage Men, An Adventure into Paranoia, Espionage, Psychological Warfare, and UFOs. There, folks, I remembered every word without looking at the book in front of me. It's not in front of me right now. I'm not looking at that. I'm looking at my time clock for the show, but it's right there and I remembered it. Our co-host is Nick Redfern. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in
the Paracast.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. If you own an Apple iPhone and love to listen to your favorite programs on GCN, I've got good news for you. I'm proud to announce that GCN has a brand new iPhone app available for our dedicated listeners at GCNLive.com. Listen to your favorite hard-hitting GCN programs live or on demand right on your iPhone. And the best part? The GCN iPhone app can be yours absolutely free. Download the iPhone app today by clicking on the banner at GCNLive.com. Again, that's GCNLive.com.
The people grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fibers to protect from counterfeit, then carting to a private bank, having it lent back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Ted Anderson, I'm placing a free silver dollar in a book that explains our monetary system. Call for your copy, 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.